Bing signals the start of the recording. Hello, everybody. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. I am well.
Hey, Tom. How are you? How are you doing?
Very well. We're in a rare situation where I am working today and you two have a lovely day off, but you've kindly agreed to come along and join me on the podcast, because I don't think me just talking to myself would be very interesting. So thank you.
I concur.
You are very welcome. Yeah, I'm not sure it'd be much of a conversation, would it?
No, I don't.
You'd
think
have
so.
To put, I don't know, a pot plant or something in front of you to chat to.
And it would quickly move on to that fascinating subject of non-league football. So,
well, it's funny you should mention non-league football. Wait, I won't spoil it. More in a minute.
You're listening to the Real Reading Podcast.
I'm Hugh Fort.
Hello.
I'm Hugh Fort.
I'm Rachel Nemeth.
And I'm Tom Canning. And welcome to episode 103 of the Real Reading Podcast. You can like us on Twitter at Real Reading Pod, and you can search Real Reading Podcast Group to join us on Facebook. Apologies for the slight delay there. Rachel is only in Caversham, but she may as well be in America, I guess. Rachel, why is your internet lagging? Just let us know.
Oh, I assume there was a lag there before I started talking. I'm doing my multitasking, solo petting, and trying to record a podcast. So Zachary's currently watching a film, which I never thought about the fact that actually the film would be downloading as he was watching it. So he's currently using all the broadband, which bad mama planning.
Don't you have a VHS?
Nicely. No, we've got a projector with the big old reels, Hugh. So we've just like...
just downloading something physical like that off the internet as well. I imagine that takes up all of the pipe.
Oh. Well, hopefully it won't take too long and then I'll suddenly kick into real time.
What film is it?
Oh, it's a new one. It's called Hop, about a rabbit voiced by Russell Brand, who quits his role as the Easter Bunny because he wants to become a rock star. So that sounded right up Zachary's street. So, yeah, he's quiet at the minute, so I assume he's enjoying it.
Zach is he's well into Freddie Mercury, isn't he?
Yeah, did you see the pictures?
I did see the pictures, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He insisted that he wanted a little moustache drawn on with my eyeliner so that he could rock out properly to Bohemian Rhapsody. Nice. I was very proud.
Well, if he's as talented as Freddie Mercury, you're going to have a nice life there, Rach.
Oh, honestly, Rich and I just cross our fingers every day. Please, please let him be like following Freddie's footsteps.
Please have the voice of an angel.
Yeah, and ultimate entertainer, that would be.
Yeah, well,
he's already pretty entertaining, so he's on his way there.
You could pretty soon be moving up to the named streets in Caversham, the named houses, rather than the numbered ones. Come on,
right? Rachel,
I know my roots.
Rachel of,
I know my roots.
Of the Warren.
Can you imagine that?
You're Rich living by the Thames.
That would go right again. I think Richard he'd have to really go against his sort of is it mod? Is he a mod?
He is a mod.
He'd have to really go against his sort of, you know, his I'm sure living by the river though. I'm sure you could I all my scruples would go out the window. for a house.
Well, in fairness, we already live near the river, but it's more in a flood zone rather than an affluent riverside setting.
Sometimes the river comes to you.
Yeah.
We should move on, really. I haven't even bothered to do the bit where I tell you what's coming up yet. So I'll tell you everybody what's coming up. We've got some of the week's headlines, including developments on the Reading Golf Course Homes Plan, which I know we've spoken about before, but there are some developments. More mounted police in town, and we will find out why the council are bailing out Greenwich Leisure, which. We'll talk about that in a minute. This week's big interview, I mentioned non-league football. This week's big interview is with Victoria Pike, who is the club treasurer, facilities manager, bar person, and much more at Reading City Football Club. So, I think it's time to hear from Jeremy about how you can get in touch with us.
Get in touch with the team. Email hello@realreadingpodcast.co.uk. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Real Reading Pod, and join our Facebook group by searching Real Reading Podcast.
Thanks, Jeremy. Guys, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago I was going to tell you about the Loop Man. Are you aware of the Loop Man?
I don't remember that.
Well, it's not something you have to remember. It's current. So so my wife is part of Reading Gossip Girls.
Ah, similar to the Caversham Gossip Girls, where I get all my knowledge. Yeah.
And of course from Berkshire Live.
Yes.
Oh yeah, and that is my other source, yeah.
Where Berkshire Live gets all its news from.
Oh.
don't ever check to see if the news is the same. So, yes, she was telling me about a post on there, and she sent me some screen grabs. It's quite good. Does the Loop Man ever take a break, or is it every sunny day? This was back on the 10th of August. Now, the Loop Man is someone who has a plane who, for years and years and years, every time it's sunny, and usually on a Sunday, you can hear him from my house in Southcote going,
the aerobatics.
No, it's just a bloke who stands at the end of the road doing that.
I don't have any info on this person because it could be a woman, could be a man, could be a woman. Don't know. But it's from some sort of local airfield, and I've always thought probably Woodley, but I guess it could be White Waltham or possibly Farnborough. I don't know. That feels like it might be a little bit too far.
Is there an airfield at Woodley where they can take
I'm
off?
I'm pretty sure Woodley Airfield is a housing estate, Tom. So,
is it? Yeah. Okay. Well, they just
shoot down the Bade away and take off as they get to showcase, I think.
But anyway, there's a person who's doing all of this. And obviously the comments and the responses to this are wide and varied. One person said, my kids love watching him from the trampoline. Another person said, I generally can't even see him. I can just hear him, which is me. I don't think I've ever seen the plane. So there's lots of people going, oh yeah, my kids love it. And then there's other people just going, it's every day and has been for years and drives me crazy. Dull buzz constantly. I know I sound like a grumpy old woman, but it does my head in. And then there's another one. It's been irritating me for years. I was told it was Mould the Scrap Man. Don't know if that's true. But yeah, just something that I'd not even thought about being a thing. And then someone called him the Loop Man. And there you go. I don't know if anybody knows. No, I'd love to speak to the Loop Man. Fascinating.
Was it
Mould
the Scrap Man?
As in J.
Mould.
J. Mould.
I know Mr. Yes. Mould.
Do you?
I do.
John. I think I used to do his recruitment adverts for him many, 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 many moons ago.
I think it's Mould Junior now.
It is indeed. Yes, it is.
He's also Jay, but I think I know him so well I've forgotten his first name.
Justin. So,
Jack.
Could just be Jay. I don't really have anything more on that. I quite enjoy listening to him going. It does get annoying after a while, but if anybody knows the Loop Man, if anybody can put us in touch with the Loop Man, I'd love to speak to him and find out, you know.
Are we sure it's the same Looper? Which sounds a bit too much like Oompa Loompa.
No, not even slightly. Not even slightly. Okay. Which reminds me...
You think the loop man is like Lassie, in that there's loads of them.
We don't get them over this way. I don't remember ever seeing one here, but if I'm at my parents in Sonning Common, they quite frequently have them.
If you don't hear it, it's got to be somewhere close to here then. So
yeah,
I don't know where that would be, but
White Waltham anyway. Maybe.
There's yeah, there. Sort of Maidenhead way, isn't it?
Yeah, and you can get
Ocean Airfield.
There's one on the way to Wallingford,
yes.
Isn't
yes,
there?
Yes, there is. Yes, yeah, I think Blackbush is still in existence. Yeah.
So we've narrowed it down to one of possibly three, maybe four, depending on status of housing estates.
Somewhere in Berkshire.
So we've narrowed it down
maybe
to somewhere near
Hampshire.
Yeah. We do have one bit of feedback. I saw Councillor Ashley Pearce last week. Very nice man. But he said he was listening to last week's pod. He said this was to do with the Southcote Library, which is going to become homes. And we weren't sure what was happening to Whitley Library. He says, just listen to the pod. Whitley Library moved into Reading Council Community Hub a couple of years ago, like Southcote, and the old site is in the process of being sold to a community group for community use and not flats. The old frontage and trees are protected. I said to him I'd clear that up, so that's good news. Talking of news, shall we discuss the news? Hello.
I feel like we need a news jingle.
No, yeah,
we need to get Jeremy to do something.
Could we get him to act as some sort of paper man who sells newspapers or something? Going, the news, stop press.
Like the guy who used to stand outside Marks and Spencer's selling the Post in the good old days. Yeah,
we do need a jingle. First up is the first plans for sprawling 260 home Reading Golf Club development revealed. Now, Hugh, you know a little bit of the background of this. It's complicated because it's in two separate is it districts or is it under two separate
councils? If you want to get really really council nerd, local democracy nerd about it, one's a borough and one's a district.
Oh,
and please do not ask me to explain the difference between the two.
because you don't know?
No, I need to phone my mum.
Phone a friend, phone your mum.
Yes, so this plan is at Reading Golf Course, the majority of which, in fact, is in South Oxfordshire, and some of which is in Reading Borough. The application is for 260 homes, mm-hmm. and that is on the bit of the golf course that's in Reading. It would be, unlike most planning applications in Reading, it contains houses rather than flats, building on part of the golf club. The golf club is moving to Caversham Heath, leaving the whole golf course empty. So the first plan for 260 homes has been submitted to Reading Council. Obviously, because it's so close, South Oxfordshire Council will also have its own input into the plans. There are various concerns. People in Emma Green and Caversham have, as well as actually in South Oxfordshire as well, because it's so close. So in villages like Sonning Common, where I am now, there are also concerns. My father's on the parish council, and he said that they're going to have a long discussion about it because of the traffic impact of it. Because it's houses rather than flats, there isn't the thing they have in the Reading Town Centre, where they build a very large amount of homes with a very small amount of car park spaces. This has got more car parking space, considerably more car parking spaces than there would be houses in this application. And so the fears are from people of the roads being clogged up, the access to the site not being great, losing a massive green space, which, you know, it's a golf course. It's a big golf course. So
Which I think was open for public use during lockdown, wasn't it? Which was really popular for people walking and
getting out and about. Yeah, and it's a golf. It had been a golf course as well, where people who weren't members could go and play as well, which is not that they're not that easy to find as an amateur, very amateur golfer. They're not that easy to find around here. So there is that. But the big concern is that once these plans are in and approved, that another plan will be put in for the rest of the golf course, which is much bigger.
The
golf course, I think the golf club has stated that that's not going to happen anytime soon, but it hasn't been ruled out, and it seems quite likely, rather than just leaving a great expanse of land to become, which used to be a golf, so it's designed as a golf course, so it's got, you know, it's got fairways and the old greens and stuff like that. It suggests something will happen to it, but
yeah.
At this stage, there isn't a second plan in for that land. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with that. There's a lot of emphasis in this planning application on making sure that not so much the golf course aesthetic, as in it won't necessarily still look like a golf course, but keeping a lot of the trees that are already there, because obviously a lot of work goes into these golf courses to make them look nice and have sort of greenery and what they call rough and stuff like that. And so there will be green areas potentially within this development, but it is, I think it's very much aimed at families, and there's some quite big houses in the application. I forget the breakdown of what's what, but there's certainly, I think, four beds on there.
What about other infrastructure, Hugh? Like, you know, because that's obviously huge on doctors and schools. And
it's also, there's no school, which is a concern.
Even though it's aimed at families.
Yeah, there's no school. This school's provision. There is another school being built in Reading at some point nearby by Rivermead,
secondary school. But over the Hill and Emma Green, I believe, are probably pretty fully subscribed each year, which would be the two catchment schools for that area.
Yes, there is. There's always this concern when there's these big applications, and the developer says, developers usually say, "Well, we've not been asked to put a school in." But there is a health centre.
Not my problem, in other words.
Yeah, there is a health centre, so the residents, people living there, will have access to doctors on the site. But in terms of schools, what are we looking at? We're looking at, you know, it's a 5-year permission. Where are we? August permission, probably not until next year. Building work. Well, the club doesn't leave till 2021 anyway. So building work to start after the club leaves, say, I'm just speculating here, but say the middle of next year, first homes to open, maybe 3 years from 4 years from now, say. So that does give that gives the council the opportunity to provide the extra school places that this development would need. You know, it's an obligation to provide school places, and there's an obligation to provide housing, so the council should, if it is minded to approve this development, be, you know, on top of that situation. What would happen if there's another bigger development submitted on the rest of the golf course and schooling? Yeah. Who knows? But that's potentially way down the line.
I wonder what kind of housing it's going to be as well, because if you're saying it's sort of family orientated and I guess 2, 3, 4, 5 bedroom properties and things, that, you know, I know they're building quite a big one in Solling Common at the minute, and there's nothing available there for less than about £500,000, which it's a lot of money.
Yes.
You know, if you're building 260 or whatever houses for £500,000 plus,
there's 85 affordable houses contained in the in this development, which meets the council's requirement of that affordable homes being, as we discussed last week, 70% rental of market rate, like council houses, but probably not run by the council. But yes, in terms of the other houses there, they're likely to be quite pricey, as is the way with this area and large houses.
Hugh, you said about sort of trying to keep the aesthetic, and I've just got images in my head of like someone's front garden being a bunker, or you know, perhaps there's perhaps a little flag out the front that you can lift out just as you sort of pot a ball. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, little golf buggies parked outside every house, yeah, and you get a caddy.
The second story we just wanted to look at was Thames Valley Police are deploying some mounted officers around the town, and I sort of always when I see this I kind of wonder what's that, but it's not so much about putting more officers on the streets or anything. It's more about being a presence and being visible, isn't it? I think
yes so it's in response. There've been some fairly major and rather nasty violent attacks around the Reading area since the start of August, and the police are increasing patrols around the area as a way of being approachable and for people to talk to them and to be able to deal with anything that does happen swiftly, I would guess, as well. We've had some stabbings, one of which happened in Scales Lane on Monday. A woman was quite seriously injured in an attack by the Thames.
Was that a random attack, or is by somebody that she knew?
I don't know. They've called it an isolated incident, which
suggests they were known to each other.
Two were known to each other. We've got to be a little bit careful because a man has been arrested. We'll have to see how that one progresses. There was another incident in Tolhurst where there was another stabbing as well. Again, arrests have been made over that one. And then a woman was injured in Reading Town Centre as well in the early hours of the morning in August the 15th, so the last week. That was outside Metro Bank. She was pushed over by someone and suffered some quite bad injuries, broken nose, broken cheekbone, broken eye socket, and had to go to hospital. Again, someone has been arrested.
And then there was the one up at Cemetery Junction.
That was earlier this month on August the 4th. And that's the only one where no one's been arrested as of yet, and police are still urging people to come forward with information over that. So some nasty incidents in various different parts of the town, and the police just trying to make themselves more approachable and make people feel a bit safer. And so if you see the mounted officers around, it's likely that there's not some massive operation going on. It's just to have that presence and make people feel a bit safer.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because obviously they want to be seen, and you can't really miss someone sitting on a big horse. But sort of in terms of being approachable, I don't know. Someone sitting on top of a big horse, looking up at them, trying to ask.
I was thinking the same.
I utterly understand the point of what they're trying to do. If they want to be approachable, I'm not sure sitting on a big horse is the way to go about it.
There are plenty of foot patrols going on. Yeah, you're sort of face to face with the horse.
Yeah,
they used to quite often have mounted police up at football and stuff.
Yeah,
you wouldn't put a toe out of line if there was a load of horses about.
they do make you act sensibly, don't they? Because cool, they're a bit. I remember my mum used to work with horses, and she's always telling me about a horse broke her leg. Broke my mum's leg, and I was like, "Oh God!" Just by kicking her. Oh, oh dear. Right. So I'll be looking forward to see some mounted. It's obviously not for good reasons, but I think it's always good to see the horses out and about. And
where are they going to go? Like just down Broad Street and stuff.
Down Broad Street, yeah, maybe.
Are they just going to target areas that? Because those incidents that you've just mentioned, Hugh, they're quite spaced out. It's not sort of highlighting one particular area that's having
trouble. I think
they're
in Prospect Park yesterday.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong. Okay. I think I saw that.
It does also occur to me. Do you know dog owners have to carry their the excrement around in a little plastic bag when it happens? Does the police person
no.
Get off the horse and trowel it in a bin bag?
I know why the answer to this, because I actually asked someone I know about their horse and what happens when they're trotting down the road and it needs the toilet, and they just, because horses only eat grass, that's their poo is not like, it's not as horrible as dog poo, so they just leave it and it just sort of rots away quite quickly. And
oh, lovely.
So also, there's an enormous amount about it of horse dung when it goes, and it's be much more difficult. You have to take like a box with you or something like that, wouldn't you?
I remember seeing a thread on back to my fountain of knowledge, Caption Gossip Girls, about that somebody wasn't happy that some people had been riding horses around their streets and it had done that, and she didn't like it, and then everybody else pounced on it and was like, why didn't you just go and like shovel it up for your garden? Because it's excellent for the roses, apparently. So if they do it down Broad Street, then they should just have somebody following, take it in a wheelbarrow to Forbury Gardens and just, you know, fertilise everything with it.
Thanks, guys. I think we'll move on from horse
that weird tangent.
From horse poo. Yeah, should do, probably.
These have all been slightly directed at Hugh this week. Sorry, Rach, I do apologise.
That's all right, I'll just chip in.
Yeah, well, that's what you and I do best, isn't it, really? Get Hugh to answer the big questions, and we just come up with the funnies. 410,000, or there will be a £410,000 council bailout for the struggling firm behind Reading's leisure centres. That's GLL, which is Greenwich Leisure something, or I think they are also known as
Limited.
Becca. Ah, Greenwich Leisure. They're also known as BED. I read in this piece, one of the interesting things in this piece was that they're a not-for-profit business, which I thought was interesting. I just wondered if you could, I know this isn't your story, Hugh, but I wondered if you could just delve into this a little bit. Because it's about swimming pools, isn't it, really?
It's about our old friends, the swimming pools. Yeah, delay. So the first thing to point out is that these pools, which are promised, and the council is under considerable pressure to deliver, unfortunately have been hit by coronavirus and are going to be delayed by a further 6 months. GLL, Greenwich Leisure Limited, which it runs Rivermead already, is the company who's going to do all this for the council. But because of coronavirus, it is no longer going to sign the contract it has been given by the council until next spring, but the council has had to pay £410,000 because they want to get on with it. So the council, the next stage is to sign what's called a planning cost agreement to pay £816,000 for preparation work for the pools. And then the council retains the intellectual property rights over the designs that GLL come up with if the contract isn't signed. So presumably that means they will find someone else to build it in the same way if GLL is unable to do it. This kind of plays, it's just another twist in this saga of new swimming pools. And goes back again to why I know the Arthur Hill Pool and the Central Pool are expensive and old, but they've both been closed and nothing will replace them, and now this is going to be delayed again. I know coronavirus is no one's fault, but it puts more pressure on the council to deliver these projects as quickly as possible, and for them to be good and much better than they existed in the first place. And the protesters have been Peter Burt, who is an active protester from the Arthur Hill campaigners. So it says it's £1.2 million in total the council's going to be spending on this contract. He said it was eye-watering, and has questioned why the council is outsourcing its leisure services rather than running themselves. And the reason is because the council won't be able to afford the ongoing running of it, and so has to get someone else to do it.
Can I ask you how this compares to another story that I saw on Berkshire Live this week about Bournemouth? Was it Bournemouth, new leisure centre? And it was like £14 million or something to open this new leisure centre with a pool and gym and stuff. Is that open to the public?
Yes.
And I imagine that's part of Wokingham.
Yes, very near Reading.
Is that the difference?
People in... Well, I don't know the exact ins and outs of it, but certainly Wokingham decided it was going to replace Bournemouth Leisure Centre, approved a planning application to rebuild Bournemouth Leisure Centre, and has rebuilt and reopened in it in about 4 years. I suppose the advantage was that the centre was already there and it was already owned by the council, and the council just had to organise rebuilding it and on the same site making it better, whereas it wasn't fit for purpose. But it just needed knocking down and rebuilding, whereas Arthur Hill was definitely not fit for purpose and also a historic building, and therefore knocking it down wasn't really the option. Reading Central has been knocked down and will eventually be replaced by something else. But why Reading wasn't further along with planning the new leisure centres before it closed the old ones, apart from the obvious reason of costs, will be certainly used as a stick to beat them with by their opponent, by the people objecting to these plans. No one ever protested the closure of Reading Central. It was always Arthur Hill. But to close both the pools and be so, and not at all be along the line to replace them, is something that people are always going to criticise them for.
Because there was surely at Central a lot of swimming clubs and diving clubs and synchronised swimming and all of that. And where on earth have they gone?
Probably sitting quite happily, knowing they'll never have to dive off the top board at Reading Central ever again.
And we're back to the diving board. Yes.
Right. Thanks, guys, for your inputs into the news this week. That is it for part one. In part two, we'll be chatting with Victoria Pike from Reading City Football Club.
The big interview.
Hi everyone, I'm here with Vicky Pike at Reading City Football Club. Hello Vicky, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you, how are you?
Not so bad. I've been trying to get you to do this for ages.
I know.
How are you feeling? I know you're a bit nervous.
I'm fine actually. I suppose we've just been busy with the game and we've had youth training, so had a busy evening, so I haven't had time to think about the podcast.
So how, Reading City Football Club, it's a relatively new club, but obviously it's on Scours Lane, we're West Reading, aren't we? I always get these mixed up. It's sort of at the back by Stadium Way, behind the industrial units, down a little lane that if you don't know you're looking for it, you might never find it.
True, yes, yeah. I think there's good rail connections and bus links and so on, so it's fine.
How did you get involved with a non-league football club?
My son joined Reading City, I was about 6 or 7 years ago, And so it was running an under 10s team, so I decided to do the admin. But I started to look outside of the team thinking, oh, they need a few procedures in place and, and a few others need help with their admin. So I ended up, a memo came out and I was on that, named to do all of the youth finance. So I said, well, how many teams are there? I don't know anything about football. How many teams are there? And it's at the time 17 teams. So I didn't even understand what a JPL league was compared to an East Barts league. Didn't know anything. So yeah, that's how it started.
What's your background in work or?
Yes, I used to work for a company called Regis that rent office space. I was there for 10 years. So predominantly, I've worked in credit control and finance and admin.
So it's right up your street what you were doing then.
Yes.
Did you need to know what a JPL and an EBFL and a, do you need to know what that is, or does it help?
I've sort of progressed over the years. So this will be my fourth season.
Yeah.
I was a bit apprehensive at first. When I took on the work here, it's something you've got to make of your own. And I think I just came in, snowballed in. And then within that first season, there's a WhatsApp group. I'm really kind of sort of bossing the managers around, the youth managers, and sort of getting them to get all their finances collated and pushing out admin to them. So, and that, I grew confidence with that over the time and over the seasons.
How do the managers react to that? Do you have a good rapport with them, I presume?
Yeah, I think I snowballed in. I made the job my own, which I love. I did end up with a nickname after the first season, Karen Brady. So that's how it all started off. And then after the sort of second season, I started to help out more centrally. With the first team and the under 23s. And then the third season, I came along and I started to update the procedures for the clubhouse because there weren't many at the time. So, introduce contactless, etc. Yeah. And many other procedures.
I think just at this point, it's probably worth just pointing out that the people at this club that run this club are all volunteers, aren't they? Does that include yourself?
Yes.
So you do this for the love of...
Yeah. I get paid for match days.
Right. You work the bar on a match day, yeah?
Yes, yeah. I never thought I'd pull a pint. I've never, ever pulled a pint. I was really apprehensive about that as well. But I love the atmosphere. And I do. Yeah, it's great.
I think speaking to the chairman, Martin, this season and this summer, especially with COVID and with the way that non-league football has sort of just been left to its own devices, really. From what he was saying, you've really kind of stepped into a sort of an overall bossy role. What have you been up to? What's happened? Because some people who come to this club probably... entirely fairly in the past have thought it's not very good there. It's the pitch isn't very good, the car park isn't very good, but that has all changed. I've seen it for myself. That has all changed in the last couple of years, and Martin was telling me you guys have made the most of the COVID break. So what have you been up to? What's changed?
We've used materials around us, really. So we've sort of looked around the ground and we found quite a few old signs that the festival had. So we put quite a few signs up and so on. Presentation's key for me because when I used to work at Regis, it's all about, the focus and the cleanliness and so on. So we ended up sort of painting, reinforcing and stabilising all the veranda outside the clubhouse, painting beams, jet washing, all the pitch walls, painted all of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even to a point that we had the pitch seed-drilled and then a drought came along.
Yeah.
So even to the point that I've been watering the pitch as well. So I've done many jobs. but while we done that, it was what little spare money we had, we said we have to invest in the car park. So it was a job that we had a certain quote for, But as they started the work, it ended up that we had to get in scalpings. So then we've put all of our reserves into the scalpings to make a great surface. Yeah. But we kind of run out towards the end. And that's why we're still looking for sponsors for scalpings to help us out.
So it's not quite finished then, but it's certainly, you won't be getting out of your car and putting your foot in a puddle.
No.
So
no,
which is
a relief.
Yeah.
It is a relief.
Yeah. So I did sort of say to you before we started this, I didn't want to dwell on sort of the idea of a woman being involved in a non-league football club, but some of the people listening to this will know that I'm keen on my lower league football. And it is fair to say there aren't many women involved in the game at this level.
Yes.
How do you feel about that? What would you say, and how would you think about maybe getting more? And I guess it's almost like a sort of a diversity sort of question as well, really, because everybody likes football. The majority of people like football,
yeah.
But you were sort of saying you don't really.
I don't understand.
No interest in it particularly.
I don't understand the game of football, but I like to work on the surrounding. Mm. You know, so the leagues, the setup of running a great community club, and that's what I'm here for: is to cross the T's and dot the I's. But while I work in the youth, you come across a few people that you know you could work well with.
Yeah.
So I try to draw them into it. I've got a great person who helps us with the youth, the head of youth. That's now Pam Kirkpatrick. She knows a bit about football, actually. So she's a parent in the JPL under 13s team. And also recently, where we've had youth COVID training, there's another lady, and I said, oh, you're very good with your admin. Would you like to come along and help? You know, so what would you like me to do? So I'm going to try and create a social committee and more committees expand a bit.
Is it fair to say sometimes it's just a case of asking?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is. Because what I find is 24/7. I wake up and I think, what do I need to do this morning for football? And I go to sleep and go, oh gosh, I haven't done that. It is 24/7. And I don't think people realise that. And especially now that I'm working more centrally, I'm now involved more in the senior football and the Hellenic side and learning more about Thames Valley League and so on. And working with Woodley as well.
Yeah. So it's fair to say it's all go here, really.
And absolutely.
Are there any sort of, there's quite a few people now involved in this club. You've mentioned a few names. Is there anybody else that sort of stands out? And because certainly the anyone that's previously played a cup final down the years at what was known as Scowers Lane, would be familiar with what the pitch used to look like at the end of the season. I think it's fair to say it's in it's a completely different level now.
Yes, yeah. Well, I think I work to sort of, you know, draw people in to help. I tend to work with a lot of the youth. You know, I've got 23 youth league teams. Mm. So I mainly with them. So it's just a case of working with people, knowing, and especially while they're here with training, I can get them to help. On this side, it's probably more harder work. On, you know, within the ground, because we're finding at the moment, because we're unsure of how COVID will be, it is actually that it's all hands on deck. So I have clean changing rooms, I have taken the bins to the top, I've painted, I've done absolutely everything, and it can be quite tiring.
Yeah.
So it's harder to find people this side for the seniors and the under 23s.
Yeah.
But I'm working on it.
and I suppose, sort of, what are your ambitions for the club as a whole, and perhaps yourself as well? Are you happy to just kind of see as things evolve, or what are the ambitions?
I think at the moment during COVID, something special's come out of this, and for us, I found that there always used to be a big divide between youth teams and the senior team. But what's happened is, because of the space we've had here, we've run COVID youth training under risk assessed, all the risk assessments and so on. We've had one-way systems in. But the more and more the youth have used the area, they're now seeing and merging sort of, and seeing, they'd like tonight they're watching a game, just a few of them just in the distance. But they're seeing and they're meeting the senior teams, and the senior teams coming along to meet them. That's special, because now I feel like we're more united as a club. And that's one thing we've always wanted to do. And a lot of the youth teams have said, oh, I didn't realise this place was here. It's your club. It's yeah. what you want to make of it. If you want to have a presentation evening here, it's for you to use. You just tell me what you'd like. And we're just, you know, if it's free that evening, you can have your own yeah. you know, presentation outside of COVID when, you know, the rules are more relaxed.
And I guess sort of... What's kind of the one thing you really want to do? Almost money no object, I suppose. But
something I don't know if you know about this yet. However, we've just been approved with the Football Foundation to have 4G pitch.
Right.
It is designated to be in Scowers Lane. So my ambition is to work through that process, to put in a technical plan in place, a community plan. We've been to a welcome meeting already, and they used, I think it was the Ascot pitch, their development as their case study. So that's what is the ambition next, is to think about where we'd place a 4G pitch and working towards that. So I think once that's in place, the approval's there, it can be done over the sort of, you know, 5 to 10 year cycle. That's what I'd like to achieve.
It is fair to say that if that gets down, then this place becomes almost a 24/7 community
Absolutely.
Hub then.
Yes,
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and that's what we've got to do. So when we put a community plan forward, we've got to say, how would we, you know, have we got the staff to cope with running this 24/7? Can we hire out, you know, two halves of the pitch and so on, and can we get walking football in, or yeah. you know, a women's team in, etc. So it great plans.
And I guess just to sort of finish off, just sort of in terms of Reading, you live in Reading, don't you? And
Tilehurst. Yeah.
So what makes you stay in Reading? Maybe there's nothing specific, or maybe it's just what is it about Reading that kind of keeps you here? And
I've lived here for 25 years in Tilehurst, and I don't know. I think when I left Regis, I became the sort of housewife, you know, bringing up children and so on, which I loved. But I found my identity again working in a community club. So that's a great draw. And I'm just happy here because I like the community feel. It's working really well, and you know, it's great to be here. But yeah, there are days it could be tiring and so on. I don't think I'd want to work for a different football club or anything. Yeah. I'm just happy here, really. It's not about the money. It's, you know, for the match day money, it's about building a proven and sound community club.
Vicky, thank you very much for joining us today. That was great.
You're welcome.
The Big Interview.
Okay, that was our interview with Reading City Football Club's Victoria Pike. Have you guys been down there at all? It's changed. If you have, it will. It's changed a lot since you've been down there previously.
Is it Scowers?
Is it Scowers Lane?
Yeah.
So is it Reading Town Football Club in all but name, or is it something?
No, it's a different club. Is there? The Reading Town Football Club went bust. That's probably not quite the right legal terminology for what happened, but they don't exist anymore. And there's a new club that's there that's taken it on, playing at a relatively high level. They've got hundreds of kids and community-based activities and stuff. And it's also the space where at Reading Festival weekend, they have all of the people working at Reading Festival camp on their site, not on the pitch, but on the surround. There's a large surrounding area, and all the workers go and camp there and have a jolly nice time by the sound of things. So I had been hoping to go down there and see, obviously, sample the atmosphere this year. But of course, no Reading Festival means that's not possible. But yeah, so that was quite interesting. I think it's time for this week's random question.
The random question.
Which is in the mug. Here we go. This week's question. Right. What did you want to be when you grew up?
A receptionist. I had high hopes.
Why?
I don't know. I remember at primary school that being asked that question, and remember drawing myself complete with my massive curly hair. Sitting at my desk with a phone and my computer, probably a typewriter, if we're honest. So when I was very small, it was a receptionist. And then when I was a bit older, it was briefly a police officer. But then I think I realised that would demand quite a high level of fitness and realised it probably wasn't for me.
Hugh, what about you? Rach, I'm sorry, I need to ask. Is receptionism in the family? Is it a family career?
No.
Is that why?
I don't know where it came. It probably, I don't know, I'd probably watched a film or a programme or something with one in it and thought, yeah, I want a piece of that. I'm going to be answering the phone and having a chat and stuff. I don't know. I don't know where it came from, but that's what I wanted to be.
Hugh, what about you?
I can remember when I was very young, I wanted to be a pilot. And then it was ascertained at quite an early age that I had very poor eyesight. And therefore, becoming a pilot would be more tricky. And I remember when I was a teenager, I wanted to be a music journalist. I got really into like metal music. But then as I got older, I realised I wasn't that into music, and I didn't really know anything about how music is made by being incredibly unmusical. So that, and my other, briefly, is when I was older, I wanted to, this is going to sound really nerdy, I wanted to be a wrestling writer for the WWF at the time.
Why am I not surprised by that?
Be a script writer. But then I realised that I didn't know this, and I don't know if it was the case at the time, but nowadays the people who write wrestling scripts for the WWE are all Harvard graduates and people like that who've got an enormous background in working in TV and things like that. They're like the cream of the crop. If it turned, you wouldn't realise it from listening to the letters they come out with. But yeah, you have to be like highly educated to write wrestling scripts. So that was the end of my dream, as I am not highly educated. So I was always going to be some sort of writer. And here I am now.
Well, yes.
What about you, Tom?
Well, I was thinking about this. When I was at school, our teachers sometimes used to let us fill the register in. So you could take the register for the class for some reason. And I used to love putting the little mark in. Each day would be a different angle. So it would go up and it would be like a zig. To the point where...
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah, I remember that.
He had like little graph paper or box. And you'd tick it for the morning. And then you'd put a downward slash for the afternoon. Yeah. And then for the next day.
End of the zigzag by the end of the week.
To the point where I used to go home and make my own registers to fill them in. With random fake people, and I'd be asking. So
you sit your teddies around so that they could.
I may well have.
Yes, Tom, I'm here.
So I probably wanted to do something involving ticking boxes, which would have been good. But obviously,
you'd like to be a teacher, but only doing the register.
Yes,
and then hand it over to someone else after that.
I'd be highly qualified and highly skilled, having come up through the ranks of the box ticking community. I also wanted to be a train driver. Thanks, guys. Here's Jeremy with how you can get in touch with the show.
Get in touch with the team. Email hello@realreadingpodcast.co.uk. Find us on Twitter and Instagram @realreadingpod. And join our Facebook group by searching Real Reading Podcast.
Thanks, Jeremy. That's quite enough for this week. We're still looking for good people to speak to, someone that would make a good interviewee on the show. If you have any suggestions, please do get in touch via Facebook or Twitter. If you have a moment, please give us a rating on your podcast app. And if you have time, submit a review. We will be back next week for more Reading podcast goodness. Bye.
You're listening to the Real Reading Podcast.